All right, folks, this is the introducing Microsoft Cloud Platform System, CDP B232. I'm assuming you were here to listen to this talk. Even if you were not, now you're here, you should stay back here. There's a lot more stuff here to, you want to stay back here. Are we on time, or we still got a few more minutes to start? All right, so my name is Vijay Tiwari. It's a privilege and an honor to be here to represent the team that developed Cloud Platform System, and a lot of us are here. I actually represent hundreds of engineers across Microsoft who have worked to deliver Cloud Platform System. There are a lot of us here. All of us who are wearing this T-shirt in this venue are people who actually worked on CPS, and there are a bunch of them here and in the audience right now. Could you just raise your hands? There are a whole bunch of us here, so it's really a privilege and an honor to be here today with all of you. We're really excited about this. All right, so Jason Zander this morning talked about the Cloud Platform System. It's an incredibly exciting opportunity for Microsoft and for you as our customers to be able to use this technology in your data centers. What we'll do today in this talk is sort of introduce Cloud Platform System to you, and there are additional talks towards the rest of the, during the rest of the conference where you'll actually get to hear more details about the storage, the networking, and the architecture of CPS. So use this as a launch point for what you want to learn about CPS. And at the end of this slide deck, I actually have a bunch of pointers to other sessions that that'd be worth going if you want to learn more about CPS. So I'll walk through, you know, what is the motivation as to why we did CPS, then what does this thing, what can it really do, and what is it? And then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how you can get your hands on something like this. The last two pictures on this slide are actually the booth that is there in the show floor. You must come by. And you know that thing there? We want you all to sign it. That's a memento for us to take back to Redmond after we've actually got finished with this conference. So please come by, sign the booth, and we'll tell you all about CPS. We actually got a rail rack here. In fact, I'm going to be running all my demos off that rack. So come by and talk to us later in the day. There are a lot of us here, so we'll take questions in the end. All right, so let's talk a little bit about why we believe we are uniquely positioned to actually deliver a cloud that you can actually deploy in your on-premise. First and foremost, you know, Microsoft has incredible amount of experience operating and running large clouds, going all the way back to Hotmail, running Microsoft Azure, Office 365. We run huge data centers globally. And so we operate these data centers at a global scale, and so we know what it takes to operate these data centers at a global scale. And that gives us the opportunity inside the product group to harvest that learning and then productize that learning in terms of capabilities and software and solutions that we provide back to you as customers. So we are uniquely positioned in that regard. The second thing is Microsoft, you know, is incredibly strong in terms of the capabilities that we provide to our customers. If you look at this, you know, we've recently been led as the, in the Gartner's Magic Quadrant, we've been listed as leaders in x86 virtualization, in cloud infrastructure as a service, enterprise application platform as a service, as well as public cloud storage services. This strength gives us incredible amounts of learnings and technologies which we can actually provide back to you in your customer premises. There's something to be said about the fact that the world's largest public cloud, Microsoft Azure, runs on Hyper-V, which is the same technology that we make available to you as customers. And so you can be rest assured about the strength, the reliability, and the level of testing that system goes through before we actually deliver it to you. And then, at the end of the day, we see the world as hybrid. And what we mean by hybrid is that you as customers will actually have assets which are deployed inside your data centers. We call it on-premises. Or you could actually have assets which are running in some kind of a public cloud, whether it's infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, or software as a service. And so you'll be living in this world where you have some assets on-premises and some assets in your public cloud. And we want to give you the solutions which allow you to actually have your assets in all these clouds and not have to worry about which particular cloud do I need to go deploy this particular asset on right now, and constantly have to worry about how I transition from one cloud to the other. So when we actually looked at, you know, how many people are deploying private clouds, It was amazing to us. About 2.5 years back, we went and talked to a lot of customers about how are they doing with private clouds. And it was shocking for us when we realized that between 50 to 80% of customers are actually failing in deploying private clouds. And that's a very large number, given the fact that the industry has been harping on the fact that you've got a private cloud since 5 years back. And even 2.5 years back, the numbers are still very high in terms of the people who are failing to be able to deploy a private cloud. When we looked at that number, then we looked at another number which said, okay, how many customers do actually feel that they have an infrastructure as a service cloud? It was amazing to say that only 11% actually had private clouds. Where everybody wants to go to a private cloud, only 11% claim they have some version of a private cloud enabled inside their premise. So with this kind of data, we went back to the drawing board and said, why is it taking customers so hard to actually deploy private clouds? And out of that learning was born the need of CPS, right? Additionally, if you look at your customers, when you as customers are sitting inside your data center and operating your infrastructure, when you talk to your customers, their demands and expectations today are very different from what they were about 5 years back. Today, everybody is used to having instant service, instant gratification. You log on to a website, you can self-serve yourself to be able to do anything, right? And so those SOAM expectations are also put on you when you are operating your IT infrastructure. People want that level of reliability. People want that level of availability from you and your infrastructure, right? And that is what private cloud was supposed to promise, but with such large number of failures, it has not been able to deliver that promise so far. The last thing you want to talk about here is that, you know, when customers actually talk of cloud, the first thing that comes to their mind is that I don't want to be able to interact with any person. I should be able to walk up to a portal, and I should be able to click a few buttons, and I should be able to get my resource provision for myself. Self-service has become the norm of the day, whether it happens to be in consumer IT, consumer-based computing, or whether it happens to be in the context of enterprise computing. People want that same ease of use and the ability to self-serve themselves. But there are always those power users who say, look, I don't want to deal with the UI. I'd be happy if you give me an API, and I'll be able to integrate that API into my own flows and my own code. And so what we've done is the consumption aspect of CPS, when your customers actually consume CPS, they consume it through a very simple web-based UI. And for those power users, we actually give them the opportunity to program against CPS using a REST-based API. The next thing, when we looked at why clouds fail, was what you see up on the slide right now, right? So you start off by saying something failed. Well, maybe it's a bug in the driver. Well, maybe it's not a bug in the driver. Maybe it happens to be some bug in the firmware. You go down deeper, and you say, well, in order for me to be able to diagnose that, I actually need logs. Then you enable detailed logging and then tell the customer to go back and, you know, try and reproduce the problem once again. Now, how many of you have run into this kind of a problem when dealing with software? Very few. I'm impressed. But this is a really incredibly challenging problem when we actually operate our clouds. We've learned this, you know, doing it ourselves. And so this is unacceptable, because when you're operating a cloud and when you're expected to have SLAs upwards of three or four nines, there is no way that going into this kind of a modality will allow you to operate that cloud efficiently. So in order to solve that problem, we looked at the problem holistically and then decided some 6 key pillars which are vital for you as customers to be able to operate that cloud. The first and foremost thing you have to look at is system architecture. And by system architecture, we don't mean just a software architecture. You have to look at all the things, from the hardware that's deployed in your data centers, the cooling that exists with your data centers, the PDUs that power your hardware, the actual cabling that is done inside the rack so that your hardware is accessible should any failures happen, up through the software stack, all the way to your portals. All of them have to be designed so that they are resilient and redundant to failure. And that's fundamental to the premise of actually operating a cloud. The next thing is that even if you do all these things, you're still going to have failures inside your data center. And when you have failures in your data center, you need to have a mechanism of being able to feed parts that have failed into your data center in a regular interval, and your supply chain needs to be able to account for the fact that should a disk fail, the workload will continue to operate, but a week later, a technician can come in and replace the disk inside a data center. So you need to have an assurance of a supply chain of these components that can be fed back into your data center as failures happen. The third thing is Microsoft has been notoriously good at giving you options of deploying things. You can do it in slide, you can do it in option A, you can also do it in option B, you can do it in option C, but if you do option C, we give you four more options on how to deploy it. Now that's good if you actually want to use the flexibility, but it also gives you a huge axe to chop off your own feet. Because what happens as a consequence of this is that every deployment ends up being extremely customized and very difficult to root cause and diagnose. And so one of the fundamental things that we do when we actually operate large clouds like Azure is to make sure that we deploy everything in a consistent manner so that its configuration is consistent, so that everything, the software is consistent, the hardware is consistent. This allows us to be able to root cause and actually operate that cloud far more efficiently than if we actually customize any one of these deployments. The next thing you want to look at is that this is software or firmware. It's going to get updates. The trick is making sure that when you actually get those updates, you don't end up bringing down your tenant while you're actually patching that system. And that's fundamental to how you operate a cloud. And we've taken a big step forward in solving that problem for you as customers. At the end of the day, even after you've done all of this, you've got a fantastic infrastructure, it's just some metal, and it's consuming power and doing nothing useful. In order for it to do something useful, you actually have to run some workloads on top of it. And so we also looked at that problem to say, okay, we as Microsoft provide a plethora of workloads for you to operate inside your clouds. We offer Exchange, Link, SharePoint, SQL Server. We offer all these capabilities to you. So rather than just giving you these components and say, go figure it out, we've done a lot of work within the engineering team to give you guidance on how you can actually deploy these workloads on CPS. And the last thing is that, you know, when you as customers run into an issue with any kind of a cloud system, you don't want to have to deal with all the individual component owners. You want to be able to pick up the phone and call one number and say, look, I have run into an issue, help me solve for it. And that's what we have attempted to do as a part of CPS. So to solve this problem was born the idea of CPS. First and foremost, CPS is integrated hardware provided by Dell. It's an Azure consistent cloud in a box. That means the way you interact with CPS in terms of the UI and the API is similar to how you would interact with Azure. So your developers, your consumers have to learn these things only once, and they'll be able to operate against a public cloud as well as a private cloud. The second thing is we have tried to make sure that all the savings of using software to sort of make the system more agile are passed on to you. So we've used software-defined technologies for storage, networking, and compute so that we decouple the underlying physical fabric from the software on top of it, which allows us to be far more flexible when you're operating a cloud of this scale. And the last thing is about a Microsoft-led support. Like I said before, in the case of CPS, you don't end up calling the individual component owners for support. You just pick up the phone, call Microsoft, and if it happens to be a hardware problem, we will, behind the curtains, actually reach out to Dell or the other hardware partners to actually solve the problem. I'm not saying that we as Microsoft all of a sudden have become experts in hardware, but we certainly have taken the pains to make sure that you as customers are not burdened with actually having to deal with support from various different components. You just pick up the phone and call us. That's it. So in terms of what CPS is actually constituted of, first and foremost, and we had a bunch of people who came down this morning to the booth and asked us for, where is the special version of System Center that went into part of CPS, or where is the special version of Windows Server? There is no special version. We are using Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and Windows Azure Pack. So all the work that we have done to enhance these software components have actually rolled back into those components so that they are extremely robust and reliable and have all those capabilities that are available as a part of CPS as well. it's done, but we have designed it. As I said, system architecture for this has been designed by us in collaboration with Dell. So we've done a lot of work to actually design it from the hardware ground up all the way to the software. It's Microsoft-led support, again, so you just call one number, and then we provide a lot of automation and guidance to you on how you actually deploy Microsoft first-party workloads on top of CPS. From a Dell perspective, we have tried to make sure that we use off-the-shelf components, so there are no special hardware components in Dell, just like it's the case of Microsoft. This makes it really easy to solve the challenge of supply chain. There is no specialized part in CPS. They're all standard Dell parts, just like the Microsoft software is standard Microsoft software. So it's based off of Dell compute, storage, and networking hardware, which I'll talk of a little later in the slides. All right, so let's talk of what are the capabilities that are there in type of CPS. I'll start from the top. When a customer, your customer, wants to be able to use CPS, you send them a URL. The URL basically gives them a web-based portal called the tenant portal, and the tenant portal is exactly the same portal they would see if they actually go to Microsoft Azure, right? It's not running in Azure. It's actually running on CPS. So it's running entirely on your premises. But the portal is exactly the same technologies that powers Azure. It is the same user experience and a similar API, which allows the customer to interact with that with CPS. Now, similar to that, we actually have what is called as a service administrator's portal. And the analogy I'd like to draw is towards a cell phone company. Now, if you have a cell phone and you go to a cell phone company and buy a cell phone plan, as a part of the plan, you get, 500 minutes of talk time, maybe 1,000 text messages, and maybe 1 gigabyte of data. So somebody in the cell phone company, Vodafone or AT&T, has sat down and constructed this plan. What they've really done is said, all right, I want to pick so many voice minutes, so many text messages, and constructed this entity along which they allow you to actually bill your customers. That's what a plan is. And in CPS or in Windows Azure Pack, you have an exactly similar construct, which is called a plan. And the plan allows you to aggregate these capabilities, which will say that I want a customer to be able to create, say, 10 virtual machines, maybe 10 websites, maybe 5 databases. You package this together and put a bill around this or a charge around this and say, look, you as a customer, when you buy this plan, here is what you can actually do with this. Because that's what self-service and billing entities are supposed to be for. So the service administration portal that you see on the top left is that portal where you as a business analyst can go in and construct those plans, which then tenants can subscribe to and actually consume that capability from CPS. Now, both these portals are sitting on top of a REST-based API. If you want to make your own portal, you can absolutely not use any one of these portals, and you can construct your own portal using your own technologies. Or even if you want to use these portals and want to give your developers access to the API so they can then program against this, if they want to create a VM or programmatically or create a website programmatically, they can use this API to actually program against this. And because it's a REST-based API, you can call this API from Java, Linux, Windows, C#, Ruby, Python, Perl. It doesn't matter. It's a REST-based API, very simple JSON-based format to be able to interact with CPS. Then underlying that is, System Center, which are the tools that you're familiar with, right? Now, many people asked us, why can't I actually get the same technologies that power Azure, which is what we use to run Azure? And the simple fact of the matter is that when we operate Azure, there are hundreds of developers who actually interact with the operations of Azure, right? And there's a very special skill set that's required to be able to operate Azure, which is not familiar to you as customers. So rather than give you a brand new tool set for which you actually have to get trained all over again, we decided to build a cloud using the tools that you are familiar with, yet taking all the learnings from running and operating Microsoft Azure and giving you these learnings as a part of CPS. So that's why System Center provides you all the configuration, deployment, management, backup, and monitoring capabilities. Now, System Center itself keeps all its state in SQL servers, and so we use SQL Server 2012 R2 as a part of this CPS installation. Now, everything in CPS is actually deployed as virtual machines, other than the storage. And the virtual machines are powered by Hyper-V. Now, from a networking standpoint, all tenant virtual machines are created in such a manner that they are isolated using NVGRE, which provides the network software-based isolation for VM networks. This allows us to actually create networks on the fly without having to reprogram the physical network. So you can create, you know, multiple VMs. These VMs can actually have overlapping IP addresses. It doesn't matter. And we can handle all of the isolation using NVGRE in the networking fabric. And from a storage perspective, we resort to using file-based storage. So all the Hyper-V hosts actually place their VHDs for the VMs on an SMB 3.0 share, which is backed by a bunch of disks. So at the bottommost layer, you actually have a bunch of disks. Layered on top of that, you have four nodes which provide a scale-out file server, and they expose an SMB3 protocol head, which allows all the Hyper-V hosts to be able to access that storage for being able to use on CPS, inside CPS, I'm sorry. And then underlying all of that is Dell networking switches, Dell JBoards for storage, and Dell compute nodes for the nodes that actually host Hyper-V. Now, we've gone to a lot of length to make sure that the way the hardware is designed, it is designed so it is easily accessible should a component fail. Disks fail all the time in these systems, all systems. And so the way we've designed it is that if a disk fails in a JBoard, when you actually pull out the tray, it will not bring down any of the storage. You can easily access the storage disk, remove a disk, and replace it back, and the system will rebuild it and add that disk back to the capacity. I talked about system architecture. One of the fundamental principles of system architecture for a cloud design point is to make sure that you're resilient and redundant, right? And you could go the extreme length and say that I'm going to have, you know, five times the redundancy. For every time I need to use one component, instead of one component, I'll use five. The problem with that is that you'll get a lot of redundancy, but it'll add a lot of cost to your system. So what we have done here is actually traded off or balanced between how much redundancy needs to be there in the system versus what should be the cost of the system. And this actually takes a lot of time to actually get right. And from studies that we have done, we believe that the design of CPS itself, if you were to design something or anybody were to sit down and try and design the construct themselves, it is about 6 to 8 months worth of many people's who are experienced in actually designing this construct. It's at least that much of time before you can even actually start to build it. It is that much of design time that we have taken to actually go build out CPS ourselves. It comes to you completely pre-deployed and pre-configured. So you don't have to go install anything. It's completely pre-deployed and configured on the fabric side, with a capacity of up to 8,000 VMs for a full stamp, which is four racks, and it has 1.1 petabytes of storage across four racks. And you can buy it in increments of one rack each. So the smallest unit you buy is one rack, which can host up to 2,000 VMs, and then you can incrementally add racks to that, going all the way up to four racks, which gives you 8,000 VMs and 1.1 petabytes of storage. And then, you know, we looked at what does it take to actually operate a cloud. Well, if you got such an infrastructure, you need to monitor it. Okay, so then we've got monitoring inside CPS included. But when you're operating such a large infrastructure, you need to make sure that all your management components are backed up. Okay, so we added backup to it. So it allows you to back up all of the management components. But that's not all. When you're operating a cloud, your tenants are going to ask you for backup. You said, all right. So there's backup even for tenants included as a part of CPS. But when you're running such a large cloud, how can you live without DR? Because, you know, you're running such a large infrastructure, you don't want to be, you know, if the data center goes down, you don't want to take your business down. So if you buy two CPS stamps, we also include DR as a part of CPS. I think that's fundamental if you go back to see how we designed CPS. Rather than basically saying, we'll give you CPS and then add on every additional capability to you, we decided to give you CPS in a running state and gives you all the capabilities out of the box. You don't have to buy anything separate to actually get CPS out of the box. Even so, insofar as actually saying that you need antivirus, that is also included as a part of CPS. You need the ability to actually configure physical switches. We worked with Dell, and they actually offer a software package called Dell Active Fabric Manager, which allows us the network switches to be uh, uh, to be uh, to be configured. You're operating, you know, a large infrastructure which is going to require load balancers, and F5 load balancer is included as a part of CPS. So we've really gone the length to understand what you require to use as a cloud and then gone and built a system that actually has all these capabilities as a part of that system. The last thing I want to talk about is that when you're operating such a large cloud, humans are the biggest source of error when you operate such a large cloud. Of course, there's going to be a human that's going to be required, but you want the human to be able to rely on automation so that the human can focus their attention on the real problems of solving business-critical issues that come up and not have to worry about mundane tasks. And so out of the box in CPS, we actually ship automation to actually make all, you know, all of these challenging tasks that you deal with included as a part of CPS. So this morning, we actually conducted, you know, a focus group with a bunch of our customers, and we were told, we asked them, what are the two biggest challenges do you actually have as a part of CPS? And they, not of CPS, I'm sorry, as part of operating your data centers. And their answer was patching, and the second thing was maintaining a password policy. And we have solutions for both of these as a part of CPS. All right, let's go on to talk about how do you order CPS. So in terms of ordering CPS, here is how you order it. You know, if you order CPS, we actually conduct a site survey along with you. And the output of a site survey basically gives us all the information that we require to actually deploy CPS. We ask you for things like, you know, network IP addresses that you require inside CPS. We ask you about power and cooling requirements and all those capabilities. And we generate two documents. One is called a rack manifest, another is called a customer manifest. And these things are then fed into the deployment part of CPS. Now, what you see, what's written in the factory part, you never see as a part of as a customer, because that's done at the factory premises where we're actually deploying CPS. The last box where you say customer premises is when CPS shows up in your premise, and that last customer premise timeline where we actually integrate CPS in your environment is 2 to 4 days. So within 2 to 4 days of a CPS box arriving at your premise, you actually can start creating your first virtual machine, website, or whatever capability you want to use CPS for. That's what we've really tried to strive for in the context of CPS. All right. So now that we are here, let's talk a little bit about how do we actually interact with CPS. Let's do a little bit, few demos. All right, so this, what you see up front, is the Windows Azure Pack portal that comes deployed out of the box in CPS. As you can see, you've actually got a whole bunch of capabilities here, ranging from PaaS to infrastructure as a service. You've got websites, you've got infrastructure as a service, you've got database as a service backed both by Microsoft SQL servers or by MySQL servers. Right? So this comes deployed, the providers come deployed out of the box, and you can actually add additional capability as you go along. Now let's take a look at how easy it is to actually interact with any one of these capabilities. Let's go actually create a website and see how easy it is to actually create a website. So I'll create new, create a website from gallery. Now, as you can see here, you know, this is a gallery that gets populated from the Microsoft gallery, and you have a whole plethora of functionality that's available for you to actually populate in your websites. I'll actually pick WordPress. Okay, I'll just create a new MySQL database. I'll use the demo plan. I'm just going to ignore that for the time being. Yes, yes. And so just with a few clicks of the button, I've actually gone and created a website from on CPS. Now, while this is constructing, we can come back to it later. Let's go take a look at how you can actually create a virtual machine on CPS. So you go to virtual machine role, go to the gallery. And again, here you'll see that you as customers can populate the gallery as per your requirements. So this particular instance of CPS has been populated with a whole bunch of artifacts. So you can deploy Windows Active Directory, you can deploy Blog Engine, and you can see here a whole bunch of Linux deployments as well. This happens to be a CentOS LAMP stack, which is Linux, PHP, and Linux and PHP and Apache. You've got a domain controller, you've got Drupal, and you got Exchange, and you got SharePoint. So this, as you as customers can offer to your consumers of CPS with a gallery of artifacts that they can actually self-deploy themselves. You can similarly do the same thing in the context of databases. You can walk up to the system and actually just create a database. And all you need to give it a few settings, and at the end, it will give you a connection string to be able to connect back to the database. So this is what customers are looking for, where rather than actually having to deal with the deployment of the entire database infrastructure, you as administrators manage the database infrastructure, and your customers only deal with creating the database, creating the virtual machine, creating the website. So they are completely decoupled from all the complexities that lie underneath, which you as skilled personnel can deal with. So this was a short demo which showed you the self-service experience that actually used inside CPS. Now, all that I've shown you here can also be done using a REST-based API which powers the backend of this particular portal. So you can construct your own portal with this as well. Okay. All right, now let's take a look at what CPS looks like. So here are three pictures which show you CPS. You see the system, it's actually there in the booth, so do come by and take a look. I think the key thing I want to talk about is this last picture here, which shows you the JBOD with its tray of disks actually pulled out. And even though this tray of disks has been pulled out, it leaves all the disks operational. So for example, if you run into a failure with an SSD or an HDD, the technician can pull out the tray, replace the disk and roll it back into the rack, and you'll not actually face any downtime. And not only this, if you actually go to the back of the rack when you come to the booth, you'll see that all the wiring has been designed in such a manner that it provides easy access for any component to be replaced as a part of CPS. So in terms of the rack itself, a single rack has 512 cores. It has 8 terabytes of memory, and it has 282 terabytes of usable storage. It has external connectivity up to 60 gigabits per second. Because when you as a customer get a rack, it's fully pre-configured and deployed. All you need to do is give it power, give it cooling, and give it network connectivity to your border devices. And get those configured, configure the identity subsystem, and you're ready to go. Because everything else is pre-deployed and pre-configured when the system shows up in your environment. For those of you who are interested, a single rack weighs about the size of a baby elephant. And so we were asked, what does a baby elephant weigh? And so we reply by saying it's 2,322 pounds. That's about the weight of a single rack. A full 4-rack stamp has about 2 miles of cable inside CPS. A full rack, full 4-rack stamp, has about 2 miles of cabling inside CPS. And a single rack, it's a standard 42U rack, and consumes it's rated for 16.6 kilowatts of power. It actually consumes less, But the power rating that we require off of the power socket that's feeding CPS needs to be rated for 16.6 kilowatts. From a networking perspective, it contains networking switches. It contains two Dell S4810Ps. These provide actually four of them on a single rack. I'm sorry, it contains five of them in a single rack. One Force 10 S55 switch. From a compute perspective, the compute nodes are actually Dell C6222 nodes. Each of those has two sockets, which are populated with an Ivy Bridge processor. Each node has 256 gigabytes of memory and has a 200 gig SSD on which we actually load the operating system for that disk. From a networking standpoint, each compute node has five interfaces. Two of them are Mellanox network cards, which provide tenant networking for us. Two of them are Celsio network cards, which provide access to storage. And the fifth one is what actually provides us access to the baseboard management controller that exists inside each machine. From a storage perspective, it is backed by four JBOD chassis. If you look here, these are the four JBOD chassis, which are Dell MD3060Es. Layered on top of them are actually four Dell R620s. And the way the Dell R620s connect to the JBODs is through an LSI card. It's shared storage, so each of these JBODs is connected to each of these Dell R620s. And the Dell R620s themselves, we construct a scale-out file server and then offer up that scale-out file server to all these compute nodes inside CPS. So again, these are where the networking gear is housed. These are all the compute nodes. Each of these nodes actually contains four of those Dell C6220 components. These are the R620s, which form the storage backend, and these are the MD3060Es, which actually hold the disks where our actual data is stored. So from a speeds and feeds perspective, like I said, you can have up to four racks in a system, and per rack you have 32 compute nodes for a total of 128 across four racks. You have 64 sockets in each compute rack, and going up to 256 sockets per stamp. From a memory perspective, a full four-rack stamp, fully populated, takes you to 32 terabytes of memory and 1.1 petabytes of storage. I'd like to draw your attention to the last three rows on this system. So the total usable storage on a single rack is 282 terabytes, out of which we carve out 156 terabytes, which is used for the workloads, and 126 terabytes, which is used for actually keeping a backup copy of those workloads. So in a single CPS stamp or a single rack, you actually have the workload storage, as well as you have the storage where you actually keep the backup copies of that data as well. So let's talk a little bit about logically how does CPS look after it's been deployed. This is the first rack. At the bottommost, you actually have a storage cluster. On top of that, you actually have a compute cluster. And then you have a management cluster, which actually manages that compute cluster. On the first rack, we take six of the Hyper-V nodes, and we create a failover cluster on which we actually deploy all the management components. So this management cluster is six nodes. Two nodes we actually keep for the edge cluster. This is which allows us network connectivity inside and outside the rack. And the rest of the 24 nodes form the compute cluster. So 24 plus 2, 6, 26 plus 6, 32, that's what gives you the 32 on a single rack. And then you have access switches and the aggregate switches on a single rack. Now, as you build out the racks, you'll notice that you don't find the management cluster on any of the other racks. So if you as a customer buy the second rack, the third rack, or the fourth rack, we don't put a management cluster on that rack. The management cluster is restricted to only being on the first rack of the system. Whereas the other clusters, actually, obviously, you'll have across all of these racks as well. All right, let's take a look at the logical layout of the CPS using some of the tools that you're familiar with. So I'll start in the VMM console. So this is VMM on the fabric side. Now, if you open the, you see here, you actually see three of these compute clusters. This is running off of the rack that you see in the booth. So it's a single rack. So if you look at the compute cluster, you'll have one compute cluster here. And this compute cluster actually has 24 nodes operational right now. If you look at the edge cluster, it will have two physical nodes. And if you look at the management cluster, it will have six physical nodes. And then if you actually go look at the storage, you will see on the file servers, you will actually see a combination of both backup shares as well as the, this is for backup storage. And if you go further down, and if you see here, you'll actually start to see the primary storage of this rack as well. So all of the fabric components are all administered through VMM. So you can actually, you can see the storage, the compute, and the networking is all administered through VMM here. All right, so this gives you a sense of what a rack actually looks like. All right, now let's talk about, you know, even though we've actually built out the stamp, how do we actually make it reliable? Now I'm going to turn on a video, but while you're seeing the video, I'm going to turn your attention to what's going on here on the table here. Now imagine yourself, imagine you are a virtual machine. You're a virtual machine, you're being migrated 10,000 times in a week. And while the migration is going on, we as engineers are doing the stuff that you see in this video. We're actually pulling cables, we are pulling power, and we're actually causing all kinds of failures to the system. So what we really did was we statistically analyzed what are the kinds of failures a rack would see in its lifetime of a year. And then we compress that in time and run a rack through those failures in a time period of 1 week. So we stress that rack in 1 week, what you normally see in 1 year. And our goal during that 1 week, while we're actually doing all the failures, that any one of you should be able to walk up to the tenant portal and do all the operations that you as a customer are expecting CPS to do. So you can create VMs, create websites, take your backup. All those functionalities should be fully operational while we are doing all these kinds of damaging thing at the back of the rack. And trust me, we did damage a few racks in the process, but we have learned a lot, and all that learning is now what you're getting as a part of this for CPS. All right, so let's dig deeper into the CPS clusters themselves. So let's start with the storage cluster. Like I said, the storage cluster starts at the bottom with just a bunch of disks. They are housed inside a JBOD chassis, and a JBOD chassis actually contains 60 disks. 48 of them are hard disks, and 12 of them are SSDs. And we use SSDs to actually tier our storage so that when you as a customer are accessing storage, our goal is to keep the most recently accessed or the most commonly accessed data inside this SSD tier. So you actually get the best performance when you're accessing storage. And our intelligence in storage spaces actually does the act of moving this data back and forth between the SSD tier and the HDD tier. On top of the actual JBODs, we have Windows Server 2012 R2 storage spaces, which aggregates all of that storage into three pools. Two of these pools are actually used for tenant workloads, and one of these pools is used for backup. And the way this storage is actually exposed to the Hyper-V nodes is through an SMB3 protocol, which is exposed through a four-node scale-out file server cluster. And so the Hyper-V nodes actually all place their VHDs on these shares and access it using SMB3. And if you know, I won't belabor you with all the details, but each rack, like I said, has 282 terabytes of usable storage. And the reason it's different from the raw numbers is because what we do is when we create those pools for the tenant pool, in order to give it redundancy, we actually triple mirror your data across all the disks. And for the backup pools, we actually configure it in dual parity, and we enable deduplication on the data that is used for backup. We don't enable deduplication on the primary share, but we enable deduplication on the backup share so that you as customers get low-cost storage when it comes to actually using your backup storage. Just to give you a sense of the kind of performance that we are actually getting out of the CPS storage subsystem, this is a chart for the two most commonly quoted numbers for storage. One is, how much IOPS can I get out of CPS? The other is, what is the latency that I get out of my storage subsystem? And it's plotted against a queue depth of what the storage subsystem is experiencing at that point of time. And as you can see here, you know, depending upon your queue depth, we are getting close to 350,000 IOPS out of a CPS subsystem. And this is based off of 8K IOPS. And statistically, what we have done is model what you as a customer would actually see inside CPS, which is about 70% read IOs and 30% write IOs. A lot of people actually confuse this, and some people will quote only read-only IOs, and there is no system which actually just does read-only. All systems do a combination of read and write as any normal traffic pattern. And so this is a realistic representation of what you as a customer would see out of CPS. So let's move on to networking. Again, this is based off of our learnings operating Microsoft Azure. So it's a layer 3 flat network inside CPS. And what you do is we actually take, let's take the tenant network. So each physical compute node has two network cards. These two network cards are wired to each of the access switches in that rack. So you have redundancy in the network path. And then the network card itself, or two network cards, are teamed. So when your tenant virtual machine is sending traffic out, it is sending it out of a teamed virtual NIC, which can then load balance across these two physical network cards. And the teaming is set up in both load balancing as well as failover mode. So if both physical NICs are operational, we'll use both of them to get 20 gigabits output from the physical host. But if one of them goes bad or the link goes bad, we can resolve to actually just using one of those paths to actually send the traffic out. From a storage perspective, the way the nodes actually access the storage is using two Celsio cards. These two Celsio cards each give us 10 gigabits per second to the storage for an aggregate bandwidth from one Hyper-V node to the storage subsystem of 20 gigabits per second. And over this 20 gigabits per second, we actually run RDMA. So that the SMB access that we do, SMB read writes that we do on the storage subsystem actually come are done over RDMA. So we get high throughput, highly resilient, and low latency traffic from a storage subsystem into the Hyper-V nodes. And then in order for us to be able to collect out from the rack or between the racks, we have each of these switches are configured in redundancy mode. So you have multiple switches, and they're set up with ECMP so that actually if any one of these switches fails, we automatically resort to using the other route, and you as a customer don't get any downtime when you're actually operating with CPS. This chart shows you, gives you a little bit of sense of how we learned about how to, you know, configure networking correctly and what are the optimizations we had to put in place to get the most out of our out of networking. On the left-hand side, you see the numbers when we actually started building CPS. And we realized that even though we had a line rate of close to 20 gigabits per second, for inter-VM traffic, we were only getting 4 gigabit throughput. That is unacceptable for you as customers. So then we went ahead and actually changed a part inside CPS, and we are now using Mellanox cards inside CPS, which contain NVGRE offload and VMQ offload. With all these optimizations we turn on, we are getting close to line rate for inter-VM traffic. So if you have a classical application where your web tier is sitting inside trying to talk to an app tier and the database tier, all of which are located inside CPS, the bandwidth throughput that you can get between them through a VM is 18 gigabits per second talking to each other. And then the other charts actually represent data when you actually get out of the stamp, when you actually want to break out of the NVGRE boundary and want to go outside the stamp, whether you want to go off-rack site-to-site, or you want to go off-rack NAT, or you want to actually just forward traffic outside the CPS stamp. And you'll see that all these numbers see a dramatic improvement because of the way we have architected and developed the system. So let's move on to the next cluster, which is the management cluster inside CPS, which is the heart of the system which keeps CPS alive. The management cluster, as I said previously, consists of 6 Hyper-V nodes, and these 6 Hyper-V nodes are clustered in a Microsoft failover cluster, and the storage is again running off of the tenant pool that you actually see inside on the storage backend. There are only three virtual machines inside CPS which are not deployed in a highly available manner on the management cluster. And they are these three Active Directory VMs. They're actually deployed on the local disk of those physical machines. And the reason they're not deployed off of the backend share is because there is a circular dependency between the Active Directory systems coming up and the storage cluster coming up. You need to have Active Directory up and running before you bring up the storage cluster and the Hyper-V nodes. And that's why we actually run three different virtual machines which run Active Directory. And physically, they are all on three different physical machines. And all of them actually are deployed in such a manner that they are redundant with each other. Should any one of them go down, the other two can handle the load. And should even two go down, the third one can still continue to operate. And so what happens is you get three instances of AD, then we have an instance of WDS, which allows us to do the physical deployment of the rest of the infrastructure using a VMM deployment. We have a WSUS server through which we actually pipe all the patches that need to go into the system. We have the WAP tenant portals, the WAP tenant API and the WAP admin portal and API that resides on top of the management cluster. And if you look here at the back end, you actually have four node SQL clusters, which provides all the backing store for all the system center components and the WAP components that are running inside the management cluster. This SQL cluster itself is deployed as a four node cluster using shared VHDX in CPS. Then you have VMM, which is deployed in a highly available fashion. You have two instances of VMM running. You have three instances of Operations Manager running. And you have two console virtual machines, which allow you to interact with the system center components as deployed in CPS. The rest of CPS is all deployed using Server Core. So in order to optimize the deployment, we use Server Core throughout the system, except in places where you actually want to have user interface and want to interact with the system using that user interface. Now, again, we are showing you this so you understand how it's deployed, but you as a customer don't have to worry about how this gets deployed. All this is completely automated and done for you before CPS shows up inside your systems. And then we have one instance of DPM, which actually is utilized for backing up all the data that's there in the management cluster. And as you can see, all these components have been deployed for high availability, and we've done all the mathematical analysis to say how many of these instances we should have in order to give you the high availability. And for those that we believe we don't need redundancy in, we've just deployed singleton instances for you to be able to operate so that we keep the cost of, you know, we give you most of the capacity for you to be able to operate your systems. Now, in terms of the management services that you get as a part of CPS, first and foremost, you have Virtual Machine Manager, which can be used for configuring and deploying additional racks or any other components that you get as a part of CPS. In fact, all of CPS management components are deployed using service templates. So the way CPS gets deployed is that you first deploy VMM, and then using VMM and the templates that are populated inside the library, all of the other systems and components are then populated through that system. That makes it really easy for us to actually subsequently go out and patch the management components after it has been deployed. For service administration, we actually provide a WAP-based portal. This is where you actually go to construct your plans. This is where you actually go interact with service management automation, which is a PowerShell-based automation engine, which we actually have as a part of CPS. We have DPM, which provides backup for all the tenants, as well as the management cluster workloads. And I can't tell you how incredibly proud we are about the work that we have done to enhance DPM so that it can now handle the scale that's required for CPS, which is 8,000 VMs spread out across four racks. And we are just the amount of work that's gone in to make that happen is just amazing. And you get that benefit regardless of whether you're actually operating CPS or we're just using DPM outside of CPS as well. Monitoring is provided by System Center Operations Manager. And again, because of the fact that we know exactly the hardware configuration, we know exactly the software configuration, we actually have custom management packs that are deployed as a part of CPS. So you get all the visibility into the management clusters, and I'll show you all of that in a little bit of time. I talked about automation. It comes with a patching and an upgrade framework, which actually orchestrates the application of all the patches inside CPS. And then CPS comes with disaster recovery as well. So if you buy two CPS instances, we orchestrate disaster recovery between these two CPS stamps using Azure Site Recovery. And this is included as a part of you buying two CPS stamps. No additional cost is incurred for you to operate CPS with disaster recovery. I'll walk through some of these, you know, some of these management services in a little bit of detail, and then show you a demo of some of these as well. So let's look at DPM. So inside DPM, you know, we break up DPM into two different, logically two different parts. There is one DPM server that's deployed inside the management cluster, which is used for backing up all the management components. And then for the tenant side, we actually deploy multiple instances of DPM to be able to back up the tenant virtual machines. On a single rack, we actually have 8 instances of DPM servers, which actually are utilized for backing up the tenant virtual machines, and you have a single instance of DPM, which manages the backup of the entire management cluster. And all the SQL databases that are required as a part of DPM are pre-configured and deployed as a part of this DPM instance itself. By the way, we use Enterprise Edition of SQL across the entire CPS system, which is included as a part of CPS, and that's entirely utilized by the management fabric. The backup is fully pre-configured and deployed, and so as your customers actually create virtual machines, periodically, and we do it once a day by default, we actually have a script which basically farms all the new VMs that have been deployed, and then actually puts them into a protection group, puts a protection policy on top of them, and then enables backup for them automatically. So you as a customer have to do nothing. Your customers just create virtual machines, and every so often we will go out, farm all the new ones that have been created, and we'll enable backup for all of them in an automatic fashion. We've done a lot of work, like I said, to actually really optimize the way we actually take backups using Hyper-V. And if you should go to a session on DPM on backup, which will talk about the changes that we have made to the entire stack for us to be able to optimize the ability for us to be able to take backup efficiently on top of Hyper-V hosts. And then another interesting challenge that you run into is that, you know, this is a fairly large system. You've got 30 virtual machines which constitute the management cluster. When you try and back them up, there is no way that you're going to be able to back up all of them at exactly the same instance. So what's going to happen is that you're going to back up VMM at some time. You're going to back up potentially DPM at a different time, OM maybe at a different time. Now, when that happens and you restore all the system back, you have VMM, you know, which is a time T, maybe OM, which is a time T plus 5. And that makes for a system when you restore it back, it can come back in an inconsistent state. So in order to, you know, to make sure that you as customers don't run into this problem, we actually ship automation as a part of CPS. And this automation will actually detect this inconsistency, will fix it as far as it can, and if it can't, it will tell you as a customer that, look, I've detected an inconsistency between these components, and I require you, you as a customer, your input, to be able to go make that system consistent back again. So now let's give you a demo about some of the management capabilities that exist as a part of CPS. All right, so let's start with Operations Manager. Now, like I said, because CPS is pre-configured and pre-deployed and we fully understand the system, this is a custom dashboard that is built specifically for CPS. So if you look here, you'll see the management cluster, the compute cluster, the file shares, and the storage host. You see all these details as a part of CPS. You can click into this warnings and see what these warnings are, and you'll get detail here. And then you can open it up here, and you'll get details about what particular warning this pertains to, right? And again, we can do all of this because we know how the system is deployed and configured. Now, not only have we done the work of actually creating custom management packs, we have operated CPS ourselves. And as a part of operating it, we have tuned every one of these MPs so that they do not create spurious alerts. Because one of the biggest challenges with any monitoring system is getting spurious alerts. And you're bombarded with these alerts, and you have no idea what to do with them because you're getting hundreds and hundreds of them in a day. Having operated CPS for so much time, We have done the work to actually optimize and tune these management packs so you as customers don't have to deal with spurious alerts and really can focus on actually acting on these alerts as they show up. Now, not only that, let me walk you back and show you what we have done in the context of working with Dell. So if you look here, so we have Dell software that's deployed on each of these nodes, and as a consequence of that, we can actually look at the health of each server and the physical components that exist as a part of each server as well. So here I can look at the memory, the power supply, and processors. So again, this is a part of the co-engineering effort that we have done with Dell so that both of us have worked together so that you as customers get a fully integrated and end-to-end solution that is fully optimized for operationalizing besides just deployment. Well, let me take a little bit of a tour through DPM and show you the DPM console for backup. This is the DPM console for the management cluster. And as you can see here, it's pre-configured and pre-deployed. So when it shows up in your environment, this DPM instance is already deployed. The protection groups are already created. The virtual machines and components and SQL databases are automatically added, have already been added into the protection group, and a policy has been set on this already. And you as customers just need to power it on, and should you run into any reason that you want to restore it back, just go to DPM and actually go ahead and restore this. And what we have done as a part of this is provided a guide, admin guide, which is customized to CPS. So we are not going to send you off to, you know, TechNet article, say, this is how you use generically how you restore database back. There is specific documentation inside CPS that you get with, say, if you run into the ability, if you want to restore the database that constitutes a part of the management cluster, you have guidance inside the admin guide, which you can use to actually just go and restore it back. And then, if required, run the consistency automation, which allows you to actually restore those databases back into a consistent state. Let me show you a few other capabilities. So I talked of two problems in the morning. One was people talked about the fact that they have difficult time making sure that the system has consistent passwords. Or you have a rotation policy and you have a challenging time rotating passwords because the system is fully integrated. OM is integrated into into VMM. DPM is in the system. You've got Windows Azure Pack, which has got multiple passwords across the entire subsystem. So as a part of CPS, we ship automation which allows you to actually completely rotate the passwords of the entire CPS subsystem while not taking any tenant downtime. So again, this goes towards our thinking, which says that as to you as customers, we want to provide a solution. We don't want to provide building blocks to you. The whole purpose of CPS is to provide an integrated and an end-to-end solution. This is the PowerShell script, which basically automates the act of rotating those passwords. Now you can say, fine, great, you've given me this automation runbook or PowerShell script, I'll do it. But how will I know when to rotate passwords? So even for that, we've made sure that there's an alert in OM which shows up when your password is about to expire, so you can then go and start running this runbook. And if you really feel comfortable, you can then hook that alert into automation, which can kick off this runbook automatically, and then your entire system can be completely self-managed. But we leave that to you as a choice. Okay. All right. Let me talk a little bit about CPS patching and upgrading. So the way CPS and patching updating works is that, of course, it's constructed out of Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and Windows Azure Pack. But how do we make sure that we give you patches in such a manner that they're thoroughly tested, and then you can apply them in an automated fashion across CPS? So the first and foremost is we work with our hardware partners, and we get a drop from them for firmware, BIOS. We collect up all the Windows Server patches, System Center patches, and Windows Azure Pack patches. Then, internally, we've got, you know, many, many stamps of CPS that are running inside Microsoft in our development environment. We actually apply those patches using that automation engine inside CPS, inside Microsoft. So we are assured that we actually have applied it correctly and it's operating correctly. Thereafter, we roll it out into an internal Microsoft cloud. It's a production cloud where our developers and testers actually create virtual machines day in and day out. That internal cloud is called Nebula, and on an average day, starts up and shuts down about 20,000 virtual machines. It has the capacity of about 90,000 virtual machines, and it is gradually rolling on top of CPS. So that capacity over time will be running on top of CPS. But a significant chunk of it is now already running on CPS. So after having tested internally on the development group, we then push out all those patches into that Nebula subsystem. And then we validate it there. After it has been validated there, then we actually give it to the customer, along with the automation framework. And then the first thing that automation framework does, we've got custom code in there, which actually goes and inventories the entire stamp. So we'll identify what is the BIOS version that's running, what is the firmware version that's running, what Windows Server patches have been applied, what System Center patches have been applied. So we get a whole, all the details about the entire subsystem. Then we compare it to what we want the system to look like. And then, using that engine, we basically go ahead and orchestrate the application of those patches across CPS. So when we are patching a particular Hyper-V host and we know that the host is going to take a reboot, we actually drain all the virtual machines off of that physical host, right? So you as your customers will continue to see their VMs running. We drain out all the virtual machines, patch the Hyper-V host, reboot it, add it back to the cluster, and put the VMs back on this. And we do this for the entire subsystem, whether we are doing it for the SQL servers that are backing up System Center, or we are doing it as a part of the storage cluster, which is backing all of CPS, or we are backing up any of the management cluster components or any of the Windows Server components that are running inside the virtual machines that are running the management components. We patch all of this infrastructure. Nothing is left out for you. You don't have to worry about patching any of CPS, including firmware, BIOS, drivers. Everything is included as a part of the automation framework. All right. So at the end of the day, I said, even after you've done all of this, right, it's only useful if you can actually run workloads. So we are working with the SharePoint team, the Exchange team, the SQL team, to give you guidance and actually automation so you can actually deploy these components as a part of CPS. Right? Now, when we talk to customers, a lot of customers talk of this concept of a tile. And a tile really is saying that, look, I'll have some mailbox, some Exchange deployed, I'll deploy some SharePoint, and I'll deploy some SQL servers. And this thing constitutes a tile. So if you as a customer want to deploy a tile, we are going to make available to you the automation and the templates that give you the ability to deploy this in a single click, right? And all of these can be actually deployed for you as customers, and we'll give you guidance on how to actually deploy these. We'll give you automation on how to deploy it. We'll give you guidance on how to actually operate these workloads, including how to back it up and so on and so forth. Now, if you back up for a minute, why is this important for us to do it for our own workloads? The first and foremost thing is that we are recognized by the industry as being leaders in many, many parts of the workloads that you deployed inside your database, inside your companies, whether it happens to be operational databases, business intelligence and analytics, or it happens to be unified communications. Gartner has recognized the fact that we are in the leaders quadrant for all these workloads. And we are going to work to give you all these artifacts for you to deploy inside your data center. As a part of this launch, we actually have Exchange, SQL, and SharePoint. And as we work through most of our workloads, we will continue to provide that to you as customers. Now, that is not to say that you can't deploy anything else inside CPS. After all, CPS, you can deploy virtual machines on Hyper-V. So if anything that can be deployed on VMs on Hyper-V, it can be deployed on CPS. Whether it happens to be any of the Linux flavors or it happens to be any of the Windows flavors, all of them can be deployed on top of CPS. So what I'm going to do briefly is just give you a brief demo on what we've done for workloads. Let's go back to the tenant portal. I should have clicked refresh first. All right, there we go. So I'll briefly walk you through. We had already shown you this, but I want to show you the gallery once again and show you all these artifacts that we've shifted. So you can actually deploy Active Directory as a template. You have Exchange. And if you go further down, you'll actually even see SharePoint here. And all these are stitched together so you can get a multi-instance complex deployment of SharePoint deployed as a part of CPS. And you get that if you actually just go ahead. We've tied it to the act of creating a new subscription. If I create a new subscription here in the collaboration workload space, what will happen as a part of that is that in the back end, I will kick off automation, which will go ahead and deploy that tile for you as a customer. So you'll get Exchange deployed, SharePoint deployed, and you'll get SQL servers deployed. And we'll give you all that so you can actually customize that for your own deployments in your data centers. Right? And then previously, as I'd shown you, you can actually deploy websites as well as SQL servers and MySQL servers as well. So just to give you a sense of what a deployed Exchange looks like, if you see here, these first three instances of VMs, they are actually the full deployment of Exchange, where you've got the CAS role, the mailbox role, and the Active Directory instance that goes along with this Exchange deployments. So this is one of those Exchange deployments that has been deployed as a part of the automation, which kicks in when you actually add a new subscription to an existing account. All right. So as I said, if you actually have two stamps of CPS, you actually get the ability to do disaster recovery between both of them. Now, the interesting part in this is that the data that you have inside your data centers remains inside your data centers on your CPS stamps. And we orchestrate the actual act of disaster recovery using Azure Site Recovery, which sits inside Microsoft Azure. So you put only metadata there. The data resides inside your stamps and replicates using Hyper-V Replica. And then you as a customer get the benefit of being able to go to the alternate site and being able to log into your resources there. Now, again, moving along the solutions line, this Azure Pack instance that's deployed, we actually have automation that populates this Azure Pack instance with subscription information. So if this site goes down, your customer can come into this Azure Pack portal and can reuse the same credentials and then go and access their same resources that they were accessing on the primary site. So coming to timeline and availability, this morning you actually saw the video of Capgemini, who's been a great partner and customer of ours, who actually have CPS deployed now for over 4 or 5 months. In addition, there is an additional service provider in the UK called NTTX, who also has CPS deployed. And then we have two additional customers in the US who also got CPS deployed inside their stamps. You as customers can go and order CPS in November of this year. That's starting in a few days. But if you're interested, come by the booth and give us your credit card and you can buy it right now as well. It's available in US, it's available in Canada, it's available in most countries in Europe, and it's available in South Africa. And we are working to make it available in APAC as well, which will come in sometime in calendar year 15. So to summarize, you know, what you're getting as a part of CPS is a fully integrated, pre-configured, pre-deployed Azure consistent cloud in your data center. It's Microsoft validated with a single vendor call for support, and it uses software-defined innovations for giving you the most optimal way to operate your cloud. Now, I've got a whole bunch of sessions here that I'd like you to go to learn more about CPS. And at this point of time, I'd be happy to take any questions. There's a mic there if you want to come up and, ask any questions.
Hi, just a simple question. You mentioned to use our credit cards. So at the end of the day, what could it cost to my credit card now?
Well, I don't know what the limit of a credit card is, but
yeah, let's see later, yeah.
Yeah, you should come by our booth and we can definitely have a conversation about pricing.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was another question by somebody at the back. I talk about 1 hour, 15 minutes about technology, and all you ask me about is pricing? Jeez. At least hey, do me the favor of asking me a technical question.
Hey, come on. The technology is tested, it's used. You look very suitable, so it's sure that it's you. It's running.
Thank you.
Not sure I'm going to top that. If you've got a customer with an on-prem Hyper-V deployment at the moment and you deploy CPS into, say, a service provider cloud, is it supported to use CPS as the DR site for the on-prem deployment?
So you're saying that you're a service provider who deploys CPS,
yep.
And you've got a customer who's not using CPS.
Correct.
And they want to be able to DR into CPS.
Correct.
At this point of time, we don't support that. Again, our philosophy when developing CPS is that till we test and validate a scenario to our level of confidence, we are not going to allow you to operate that scenario. Because when we stand behind CPS, we want to make sure that we have thoroughly validated that scenario. That is a scenario that's come up many times. We're absolutely looking to sort of enable that scenario, but it's not enabled at this point of time.
Great, thank you.
Come on, beyond pricing. Let's go. Yes, please go to the mic so others can hear your...
Just a simple question. I mean, you talked about disaster recovery between two CPS systems.
Yes.
What about disaster recovery between a CPS and the Azure?
Great question. So the question is, do you support disaster recovery between CPS and Azure? And I think all of you are now capable of answering that question. And the answer is, we haven't validated it yet. Once we validate it, we will definitely enable that scenario. That technology is definitely enabled. It has just gone GA. And we are working to validate it. And once we validate it, we will actually give that as a part of the solution as well. You are? That was a simple question. Yes.
Not a question about pricing.
I'll give you my credit card.
It's better for me, yeah? We all know System Center is not a fire and forget weapon.
I'm sorry? System Center is?
We all know when we're using System Center, you can't use System Center as fire and forget, yeah? Because when you're running it, you have to take care of your System Center implementation and all of that. The question is...
That's not even a technical question. It's a philosophical question, but okay.
Sometimes this is life. No, the question is, when you compare a traditional data center implementation of System Center to CPS, what is the difference in time consumption let's call it maintaining and all the stuff?
So I think your question really pertains to the fact that, look, if you really got a System Center deployment that actually takes some care and feeding for it to operate it, and what's the savings? So like I said before, you know, one of the biggest challenges when you actually try and deploy any of these components or the entire stack is the fact that, you know, all of them get deployed in so many different manners, it becomes inconsistent. And if they are not deployed according to best practices, when you try and integrate them together, you run into all these kinds of challenges. So that guesswork is completely taken out of CPS because the systems and components that are deployed here, and firstly, you don't see all of them deployed. You only see OM, DPM, and VMM, and VAP. That's all that's deployed. There's none of the other systems and components because they're not fundamental to the operation of the cloud. Patching and upgrade is done using our patching and update framework, right? So we've really tried to slim down and only keep those components that are valid for this, and for those that are deployed are fully optimized for CPS and configured for CPS. So we believe that the care and feeding that you're used to for normal systems and deployments should not be applicable to when you're operating CPS. And our internal testing shows us that. But as we go out to customers, we learn more. But we are very confident that the way it's been deployed on CPS should not lead to those problems. Yeah. So the question is, when repairing hard disks, are you using a hard spare or parallelized repair? We are actually using parallelized repair. Spencer, am I correct in that?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Yes. If the new version of Windows arrives in the System Center, will we be able to roll that into the CPS system?
So the question
after
is,
when
the new version of Windows Server and System Center or WAP comes, will we be able to roll it on top of CPS? We will work on that plan, and we will give you an upgrade path when we are ready to actually do it. You should go look at all the, how the Windows Server and System Center instances are going to roll out over time. But once we are ready and confident, then we'll be able to give you a path to go there. Yes. But on your own, we will not support you if you go and do it on your own. It must be done through our update mechanism. All right, so she said, telling me the time's up, and so do come by the booth, and we'd be happy to have more conversations here or in the booth thereafter.